Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Along with Jim Garrity of National Review, I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Jim is not in his normal palatial studio today. The kids are back at school, so Jim is off for a joyride around the Washington, D.C. area. Jim, how are you?
You're very close, Greg. I was going to point out that here in Authenticity Woods, they actually don't go back till after Labor Day because they want to get as close to snow closure season as possible. They very much like the idea that we can get possibly have like maybe 10 days of school in the entire year. So.
Oh, wow. Well, that's one of the districts that's holding out the longest then. Enjoy that last week and all those snow days coming up. But we start with two pieces of good news. Both of them are polls. We'll start with the purely political, and a new poll from the Des Moines Register shows that the same thing that happened to Hillary Clinton in New Hampshire appears to be happening in Iowa. This is from the Des Moines Register. Liberal revolutionary Bernie Sanders, riding an updraft of insurgent passion in Iowa, has closed to within 7 points of Hillary Clinton in the Democratic presidential race. She's the first choice of 37% of likely Democratic caucus goers. He's the pick for 30%. Clinton has lost a third of her supporters since May. Biden is thrown into this mix. He gets 14%. But even if you take Biden away, Clinton still only gets 43%. So she's clearly on the slide. Now in the first two states where people actually vote, Jim, we'll get to the second poll in a moment. But it's good to see Hillary Clinton taking a dive here in the two of the most important states on this calendar.
Yes, it's really not that surprising in light of what we've seen nationally and what we've seen in New Hampshire. But this kind of refutes the idea that, you know, this might be some sort of like localized phenomenon of Bernie Sanders, and because he represented nearby Vermont, that somehow New Hampshire Democrats were more inclined to him. And in fact, you think about it, caucuses with their much lower turnouts are where you get your real diehards, where obviously, you know, true partisan passions are what's going to drive somebody, true ideologues. And so, if anything, you'd have to put Bernie Sanders having a really good shot at winning the Iowa caucuses right now, particularly if the current, this kind of momentum continues.
Yeah, it certainly could be the case. It's the passionate ones that usually show up in the cold night of, I think it's February 1st of next year. Jennifer Jacobs definitely had her coffee at the Des Moines Register. Liberal revolutionary Bernie Sanders riding an updraft of insurgent passion. That'll get your attention. Good work there, Jennifer.
Metaphor. Yes, exactly. Pile them on right there.
All right, on to the second part of the good martini. This is from the Quinnipiac poll. A majority of voters oppose the Iran deal, and they think it would make the world a less safe place. That's pretty consistent with most polls, but the margins here keep getting bigger and bigger. 55% of Americans said that they oppose the nuclear deal with Iran, while only 25% said they support it. The poll also shows that 56% of Americans think the deal would make the world less safe, compared to 28% who think that the deal would make the world safer. So with these numbers in support so small, Jim, it's obvious that he can't even hold the Democratic base here. Hopefully that's creating a lot of pause for these Democrats who haven't announced their intentions on how they're planning to vote here.
Yeah, you know, I think my colleague Charlie Cook is working on a piece making the observation that, remember, Barack Obama's argument is that people who disagree with this are crazy, right? The crazies are opposing this.
Right.
That there's something, you know, inherently a lot, or they're warmongers, right? Well, I don't think 55% of the American people are warmongers. It's really strange to see the president losing the, you know, public relations battle, losing the argument so badly, and then just kind of hand-waving it away and saying, you know, crazy warmongers, you know, that there's, he really has ruled out any legitimate disagreement with him on this. And when you start saying everybody else around you is crazy, I think it's a good question of whether you're the crazy one, Mr. President. But then the second thing is that one of the great ironies is that here is the Republicans, the right, which, you know, whichever side you want to characterize it, making the argument against this and winning the argument enormously. And because of the way the deal has been set up for passage, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter that this is a phenomenally unpopular deal and that nobody thinks it's going to work, or very few people think it's going to work, and very few people think it's going to make the world safely. That feeling of dread we had on election night 2012 was for things like this, where President Obama no longer feels the need to persuade the public for what he wants to do. He just does it, and we're going to live with the consequences.
All right, on to the bad martini now. And yesterday on Meet the Press, in addition to his usual guest. Chuck Todd had an update on the fight against ISIS from lead international correspondent Richard Engel, who has been one of the most blunt articulators of just how badly we're doing in this fight. First of all, here's Richard Engel's analysis of what has happened in the year since we supposedly declared our intentions to stop ISIS.
But ISIS doesn't seem to be shrinking. In fact, to quote one U.S. official, ISIS's international branches are growing like crazy.
ISIS has spread rapidly across North and West Africa, Arabia, Afghanistan, even into the Far East. ISIS has expanded far more quickly and extensively than Al-Qaeda ever did.
And then there's this about the U.S. strategy.
So why isn't the U.S. strategy working? It's based on three pillars, and they're all shaky. Retraining the Iraqi army. It's been slow, and Iran often calls the shots. Training Syrian rebels, but so far only a handful are ready to fight, and many of them have already been kidnapped. And finally, the airstrikes, which are killing ISIS fighters and leaders, but who are then replaced.
And so he says that special ops leaders are now trying to reformulate our policy. Jim, a year out from the beheadings of Jim Foley and Stephen Sotloff and the rise of the threat of ISIS, this really couldn't be much worse if we had predicted a year ago how bad it could be.
I guess we, from the president's big, bold speech a year ago, we really thought we would see ISIS exploding. Not seeing ISIS, but exploding growth, which is what basically Engel's describing there. Extraordinarily frustrating. I think the fact that this bloodthirsty terrorist group is on the march, that the opposition seems to be divided and weak and retreating and getting captured. We just can't seem to get enough solid victories against these guys other than the Kurds, which Turkey is doing their best part to undermine all of that. It's that the president really doesn't talk about this very often, and he really seems to have reached this agreement with the American public that, like, look, I won't talk about it, so I won't remind you that things are going badly. And you got everyone at home, you can just kind of, you know, feel like things are going fine. And, you know, we won't, you know, there's kind of this mutual agreement with the public and the president not to think about it, even though people are dying. And it's very clear that ISIS wants to kill Americans, and they're eager to kill Americans. But it's like there's been this, you know, strange national consensus to just not think about it until, you know, Engel pops up on Meet the President and reminds us, no, the situation you're trying not to think about, it's getting a lot worse.
Yes, and obviously with a ineffective policy over the past year that leads to that explosive growth, we don't know what else is in the hopper, but if nothing serious changes in the next year, by the time another president is in place to potentially make significant changes to that policy, the problem's going to be exponentially worse, you would think.
Yeah, again, like, time is not on our side. I also am kind of baffled by, over the weekend, Bernie Sanders was on a couple of the Sunday shows, and he talked about how, well, there's international consensus. Well, international, like, look, yeah, there are a lot of countries that don't like ISIS, a lot of countries that say they oppose ISIS, but, you know, consensus without action doesn't do you any good. And it's kind of just baffling that this administration, a lot of its allies up on Capitol Hill, seem to think that if everybody in the world is denouncing ISIS, we've somehow made some sort of significant progress. But these guys don't care if they get denounced, and they're not in this. You know, they didn't come here to make friends. They came here to behead people. And there just seems to be this discomfort with the status quo, which is not moving in our direction.
It's hard to believe a strongly worded speech and a petition didn't stop bloodthirsty killers. Very, very
strange. Yeah.
All right, on to the crazy martini now. And you could probably say that this is a double-fisted crazy martini. The president is on his way, if he's not already there, to Alaska for, I believe, 3 days. His main purpose appears to be heading up there in the middle of the summertime to say, hey, look, no ice in Alaska. And so he's going to be talking about his climate change agenda, but at the same time, he's also going to officially announce, unilaterally it would seem, it will no longer be Mount McKinley, the tallest mountain in America. It will go back to Denali because that's what the locals want. The White House fully admitting that he's basically doing it to restore better ties with Native Americans up in Alaska. And, you know, it's nice to have nice ties with people, but I'm not sure just renaming something is going to be the catch-all there. But once again, we see this push to kind of whitewash or smudge or redefine history, Jim, and this administration seems to have no trouble with that.
The argument in favor of changing the name to Denali is it sounds like that is what most Alaskans would prefer. Dan Sullivan and Lisa Murkowski, the Republican senators from Alaska, have introduced legislation to do this. Apparently, Alaska lawmakers have been pushing for this for a long time. Now, the national park that's around the mountain is called Denali, so it's not like Denali gets totally ignored, but, you know, Mount McKinley is named after President McKinley, who was born in Ohio, and for a long time, this has been a big deal to Ohio lawmakers to not allow it to be changed. But I think a more consensus-building objection here is that there's been a legislation introduced to do this, and the president doesn't want to wait for that. That's too much of a formality. He's just going to announce that it's been renamed. And if the president could just run around renaming landmarks, how many things would you like to have named after Reagan or George W. Bush? How does that sound, Greg?
I'm sure they'd love that.
A future Republican president could name, you know, don't you think Hayek deserves more recognition?
yes.
Milton Friedman? William F. Buckley. Why don't we name the entire, you know, Rocky Mountains after, they call them the Buckley Mountains or something. So you can imagine how far this can go. Once again, it just seems like the president is thumbing his nose at Congress, thumbing his nose at decorum and tradition and any all limits on the presidency. I don't know what President McKinley ever did to President Obama to make him so irked. but it just seems like this bizarre fight for the president to pick. And kind of frustrating. And again, even if you're, you know, Alaskan and you really like the idea of calling it by the Native American name, it does feel like this really out of the blue, thumbing my nose, but there's other metaphors I could use as a show of disrespect to Congress. Again, I guess there's one of the lessons we can take from this, Greg. It's that, you know, President Obama knows he never has to win Ohio again.
The other thing is, you know, if in fact Donald Trump becomes the next president and presidents unilaterally naming stuff becomes a thing.
Oh, Greg, yeah. Oh, my God. We're going to be Trump-merica.
Jim, drive safely. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to tune in again on Tuesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.